There's a brewing scandal at the Fed. You're not going to want to buy stocks after you see this. And China says Evergrande's under control. Yeah, right. All that and more on today's show. Thanks for joining me today. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter. And, you know, this China story, it's just fascinating to me that, you know, China, Beijing comes out and says, hey, don't worry about this. You know, we've got this. It's all under control. And, you know, I'm not just picking on China here. You can pick on any central banker. You can pick on the Fed before Bear Stearns collapsed. I mean, it doesn't matter who. But I want you to understand, you know, what they're trying to do. And think of it as you're flying a kite, right? And you're letting the string out. So you're putting string and kite's, you know, flying away. And then all of a sudden the central banker, as a central planner, goes like, you know, I think we've extended this credit too much. And boy, we're creating all this inflation and asset inflation. Boy, that's a problem. So they start really, let's reel in that kite. Let's pull some of that slack back. Let's bring like it in. And what happens? The kite starts a nosedive, you know, inevitably. And then they come, oh, no. Don't worry. Don't panic. We've got this. We'll let the string back out, but by then it's too late. And I think that's the issue, that it's hard to understand for people when it comes to these debt-based economies, these debt-based systems. You expand this massive amount of credit and you try to curtail it. And what you find out is there's massive amounts of debt underneath it that need more credit expansion to deal with. And if you don't give it to them, well, that's why when central bankers start to tighten financial conditions, now, they don't have to just, you know, raise rates or taper balance sheets, because quantitative easing itself actually tightens financial conditions, which is not something many understand. And so by continuing to do some of these policies, things get worse. And then when the kite starts to nosedive down, there's nothing they can do. But we'll talk about this more when we get there. Again, it's just a confidence game. And someone who's not giving us a lot of confidence right now is the Fed, as a scandal is starting to brew there. Now, we already talked about this early on, but remember, well, there's one cockroach. Well, there's two, or in the case of the Fed, there's three. Let's go back to where the story started. In case you forgot, back in September, two Fed officials under fire for 2020 securities trading will resign. So Robert Kaplan had left as the head of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, and Eric Rosengren, head of Boston, decided, well, he's just going to retire a little earlier than planned. And what was going on is they were making trades on their personal accounts based on information they knew being on the board of the Federal Open Market Committee. Now, one could argue that perhaps they weren't using their inside knowledge to make their trades, sure. And Fed Chair Powell has since come out and says, hey, they were actually following the regulations, but both of them decided to retire rather than go through the scrutiny of, you know, whatever else they could have been doing. But it didn't end there because, well, as it turns out, Fed Chair Powell is a fairly wealthy guy, and he was doing some trading too. So let's take a look at what hit the news today. Is Jerome Powell sold more than $1 million worth of stock as the market was tanking. And of course, this was disclosed. It wasn't new, but now people are getting into his business because it is public record after all. And disclosure documents reveal the spectacle, the Fed officials personally trading stocks extended to the chair himself. Uh-oh, let's see what we see here. Now, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell sold between 1 and 5 million worth of stock. Now, the exact amount is not disclosed. From his personal account on October 1st, according to disclosure forms reviewed by Prospect, Powell's sale of shares from Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund has not been previously reported. The sale occurred right before the Dow Jones Industrial Average suffered a significant drop. Now, we're going to look at this in a moment and see, because I want to show you that Powell was not really doing a good job of timing the market. And there is an issue here that the stock sale came after the September 15th to 16th meeting of the FOMC, but before the minutes of that meeting were released on the public on October 7th. So let's look at the actual trades. Well, actually, let me show you before we do that what the issue is. And here it is, Vanguard Total Stock Market. There is a sale. and the amount between $1 and $5 million. So we don't know the exact number, but we know it's bigger than some of his, you know, if you think they care about these $1,000 to $15,000 trades, they don't. They're going like, hey, look, hey, he sold at least $1 million worth of Vanguard Total Stock Market on October 1st. Now let's go and look at the S&P 500 and see how well the job Powell did using his inside information. So he sold on October 1st, which would be right here. The market then went up, came back down, and has since gone higher. So it is, doesn't look like he did a good job of doing that, but that's not going to stop people from scrutinizing this. Because again, even though the Fed says they're apolitical, they are certainly such, and there are people that want Powell gone. So let's take a look at what happens next. Is now we see some betting pool here. You see on predicted saying that Jerome Powell's chance of being renominated have dropped slightly, and Lael Brainard, who is the heir to the throne, moved up. Now, why is this an issue? Is because there's one person who can renominate Powell for the job, and that is President Joe Biden. He has not done that yet, and he will have to do it here at some point in the near future. Or if he's been looking for an excuse to get rid of Powell, well, this could be it. He could say, hey, you know what? I'm not comfortable with this insider trading. We're going to bring someone else in who's really going to clean up this mess. And that could happen. Now, why is there an issue with Lael Brainard? Is because she has more of an MMT or modern monetary policy view, what would be expected then if the Democratic Party then passes a large infrastructure bill or other spending bills, that she would then crank up the QE to meet that. So there is some factor there of why people think that perhaps Powell will be on the outs. But if you take a step back on this, first, he did actually report his trades. The second thing is, he actually did a terrible job of it, and that's what I wanted you to see. So we'll keep following the scandal, see if it brews into anything more if Powell keeps his job. Of course, the ultimate decision will come down to President Biden, and who knows when, but some point this year, he's going to have to make a decision to either renominate Powell or let him know that your time is coming up at the end of your term. Now, with that, if many of you keep asking, what do you do for a living? I manage a very interesting strategy. It's a long equity strategy called Portfolio Shield. There's a link in the description below, or you can go to portfolioshield.net and check it out. Let's get on to why you might not want to be buying stocks at this level. And with this, we go to the industrial production data that came out today, -1.3%. Now, I also want to share with you some interesting news. This from David Rosenberg today. He said that retail sales, you might remember on Friday, we talked about that in the show, went up 0.7% seasonally adjusted. So, you know, obviously the people at the agency kind of tweaked the numbers a little bit. The non-seasonally adjusted number, you ready? You sitting down for this? -3.9%. Again, big thanks to Dave Rosenberg. So why does this industrial production number matter? So you see the month over month went down 1.3%. The year over year slowed from 5.66 to 4.6. So here's the industrial production chart against the Wilshire 5000. And yes, I did forget to turn off tool tips, but you do see that as industrial production rises, stock markets should go up. And then as it rolls over and heads lower, well, that tends to signal a peak in the market. Now, what's the problem is for the equity market, and you can see it happens here again in 2014, it starts to come down. Stock market has a little bit of problem. Here you see it again in 2018. And what's the problem now is the market has massively front run a move in industrial production, and it looks like it's starting to peak and roll over. And that, again, is going to be a problem for the equity market. And what this is telling you is you probably shouldn't be buying stocks at this level, or if you are, make sure you've got some form of hedging or risk control on it in case industrial production rolls over and heads lower. So now let's take a look at what this means for GDP growth. And we've talked about this before, how easy it is to predict GDP coming down. And here you can see the year-over-year change of industrial production against the year-over-year change of GDP. And you can see just how well these two map together. And what you see is the industrial production year over year heading lower, which means GDP growth is going to head lower. And the only question is, how far down will industrial production go before the end of the quarter? And we don't know that. Now, but what does this mean potentially to where things are at in the economy? And I want to go to the business cycle ETF map that I put together for those who are subscribed to Momentum Timer Pro. And I do need to update this. Hopefully I'll do that today or tomorrow. If you're not sure what this is, you can go to MomentumTimerPro.com, check it out. It's currently free, so you can't beat that price. But here we see stagflation as decelerating growth and increasing inflation. Well, where are we at right now? Well, we know growth is going to decelerate, and we're potentially, if we see inflation roll over, that we could be somewhere between stagflation and deflation, and we've already got mapped out which ETFs tend to perform best under those scenarios, so you can check that out. All right, so let's go on with the story of why industrial production matters, because then we get into capacity utilization. And capacity utilization is a great proxy for inflation because it tells you what percentage of the factories are being used. So 76% last month, now down to 75%. And let's take a look at what that looks like. So when you start getting capacity utilization in this 80% range, which is up here, keep in mind, we're down here. When you got to get up here, you start to see some inflationary forces because you're starting to push how much of a factory you can run without really ramping into overtime and increasing costs. So if we take that and overlay the consumer price index year over year, what you find is that when capacity utilization is high, that inflation can stay there. But as soon as capacity utilization starts to fall, well, you tend to get a decline in inflation, and then you usually get a late burst going into a recession, and then boom, it's all over. You see that here again in the mid-2000s, that inflation and capacity utilization rose together. It started to, capacity utilization started to stall, inflation started to slow, it got one last surge and then crash. And then you see here, capacity utilization rising, inflation slowing, finally inflation starting to catch up, capacity utilization rolls over, heads lower, there goes inflation. Now we're starting to see it peak and potentially roll over, again suggesting that this inflation story may not last a whole lot longer, but we'll get into why there's some sticky things to it. And then you look at the Fed's monetary policy, and here we have the monetary base, which is loaded up from those QE-created bank reserves. And what you see is that the inverse, turning the monetary base upside down on its head, is suggesting that financial conditions are tightening and that we will not need all this demand from the factories, and it's likely to head lower. And we've seen that before, that capacity utilization can run strong, but eventually bows down to the pressure of what the Fed's doing. And that's why I mentioned before that QE actually tightens monetary policy until it eases. Not many people actually understand that. But what does it mean for the bond market? Well, it tells you, you know, that the probabilities are that interest rates are headed lower. Here you can see back in 2018, you know, bond market interest rates went down. You see that because capacity utilization peaked and rolled over. Here you can see interest rates already knew that capacity utilization was headed lower. Back in 2014, you see that again, CAPU peaked and interest rates still didn't bottom. And now what you're seeing, capacity utilization peak and interest rates aren't making new highs relative to their short term, suggesting that rates are likely to head even lower. But what does this mean then for the consumer? Because can this inflation be sticky? Well, some experts say yes. And let me show you why they think that is, because they're saying that, look, there's $2.7 trillion in crisis savings being hoarded by consumers. This money's not being spent at all, and they believe that this could help. Now, there's a couple of views. It could be that there isn't anything to spend the money on. That may be a factor. Maybe people are just saving more. It also could be that they believe that these rise in prices is likely transitory, and they're just going to hang on to the money and then wait till prices come back down as the supply chain problems ease. Of course, how bad is the supply chain problem? Well, according to the Wall Street Journal, it's not getting any better anytime soon, and it will keep inflation elevated to last well into next year, according to surveys. And let's take a look at what they say down here. Is concerns about limited supply are the main cloud over outlook. Around half the respondents cited supply chain bottlenecks as the biggest threat to growth over the next 12 to 18 months, while nearly one-fifth pointed to labor shortages. They also expect supply chain woes to weigh on the economy through much of next year. Some 45% estimate it will take until the second half of 2022 for the bottlenecks to mostly have receded, compared with two-fifths expecting major improvements before then. So, you know, if you're a consumer and maybe you want, you know, you're ready to go buy that car you've always wanted, but there's none on the showroom floors. So you do, you know, start saving money. Do you go buy a different car? What do you do? Well, if you think prices are coming down, you think supply chain is going to get resolved, well, then you start sitting on your cash. The only question is, where do you spend that money? Somewhere else in the interim? Does the economy roll over and head lower and you actually need that money for other reasons? We don't know, but we can see that the problem just isn't supply chain related from a shipping point of view. We see here from Zero Hedge, aluminum shortages next as magnesium supplies dry up. And then you could say, but Steve, you know, wages are growing, you're right. And of course, the Atlanta Fed wage growth tracker is showing that wage growth is at 4.2%. You know, you could also argue that that tends to happen right before recessions, it starts to rise. But the other factor here that I want you to think about is there's still about 8 million people that just came off of unemployment benefits, and they're not benefiting from these increased wages yet. So that's the issue, is when those people go back to the workforce, or if they do, we still don't know, will that put downward pressure on wages? But one thing we know is that when financial conditions tight, when you see the supply chain issues and inflation, what do workers do? They say, hey, I want a raise. I want a piece of that pie. I want to share with you, employer, of all this money you're making. And then, of course, when you get a slowdown in the economy, now all of a sudden employers are stuck with these higher wages. And that's how you end up getting layoffs as a result. And you would think that things would be better due to all this money being spent. And there is some good news. Fewer in the U.S. turn out to food banks. I mean, if there's $2.7 trillion in savings, that's good news. It says, but there's still millions in need. Here's the worst part. Hunger and food insecurity across the United States have dropped measurably over the past 6 months. But get this. But the need remains far above pre-pandemic levels, and specialists I'm warned that the situation for millions of families remains extremely fragile. So here we are, after fiscal stimulus, massive monetary policy, people are worse off. And are we going to see some relief from food inflation? Well, probably not. And while we don't get much food from China, we don't get any, there's flooding in West China destroys agricultural production, and they're big importers. So that means it's likely we're going to see food inflation stay elevated. And so while some of this data says that we should see prices coming down, we're going to see some prices stay up. Now, how does that balance itself out? Well, if you're in tight financial conditions, which we are, and there isn't as much money to go around for everybody, and certain prices that you must pay, you know, food and energy and rents are stuck high, what does that mean for consumption on the other end? It's got to balance itself out. And I think that's one of the few things people don't really understand, is how it can balance itself out. Higher prices in one area lead to lower prices in the other, because there isn't enough money to substantiate the higher prices across the board. Now, in China, they say, no worries. Here, let me show you, because we know that this is not something that just goes away. And if China pulls us off, I'd be very impressed. China breaks silence on Evergrande, says risks are controllable and unlikely to spread. Authorities and local governments are resolving the situation based on market-oriented and rule-of-law principles. That sounds great. According to the People's Bank of China official Zhu Lan, said in a news briefing on Friday, the central bank asked lenders to keep credit to the real estate sector stable and orderly, who is the head of the financial market development. Now, somewhere down here, and this is great, I wanted to show you this, is somewhere it said that they are telling people to keep, the central bank is urging property firms and their shareholders to fulfill their debt obligations. I mean, you gotta love it, right? I mean, it's, you know, they're going to try to solve something that is a confidence issue, and you can see they're trying to do it. There's no actual solution to the measure. The only way this gets resolved is if Chinese consumers go out and buy more property and have faith that they're actually going to get delivered on those, and that global investors continue to buy up those debts from those property developers and keep them afloat. If none of that happens, well, you know how this all ends. And with that, I want to thank all of you for being fans. Thanks for supporting the show. As always, we'll see you back on Wednesday. I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Bye now. The content of this video provides educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. The show is not to be construed as a recommendation or a solicitation by selling security, financial instrument, or participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter in personal capacity. Business expressed this video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.